You are listening to Generation Radio. The podcast about Doctor Who. With Callum, Shell, and Mike.
Hi, Craig.
Hi, Craig. Hope you find your dad.
That's a different series, by the way, guys. That's not Doctor Who. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Regeneration Podcast. With me, Mike the Bike from Sweden. And then we have, from the British Islands, we have...
Hi, it's me, Callum.
Why did you do that accent, though?
That's his natural accent.
What accent?
That accent. And from the deep depths of the American forest, we have...
Hi, I'm Chell.
Yes, apparently she's an American beauty. We saw on Spotify that our about has been updated, but no one knows who did it.
So if you did it, confess.
It was a gremlin.
It's a nice text, but like, who did it?
Dun dun dun.
Maybe someone has invited? Not? No? Invented a TARDIS and went back and changed it.
It was ChatGPT.
ChatGPT.
I blame Callum for this. We always blame Callum.
Very rude. Very rude.
So, okay, we're just going to get to it because I know this is going to be a little bit of a longer episode because today we can actually discuss something that everyone wants to discuss, our favorite episodes, right? So, this Sunday, wait, I just said it. We're going to discuss our favorite episodes. So, the title of this podcast is Our Favorite Episodes of the Hooniverse. Is everyone okay with that?
Yeah!
The Hooniverse!
The Hooniverse. So, Callum, what's your favorite episode of Star Trek?
Oh, what? Star Trek!
Oh, right, sorry, wrong podcast. Callum, what's your favorite episode in the Hooniverse, and why?
Fires of Pompeii.
Oh, damn, that's...
That's a spicy one.
So, I mean...
That's a hot episode.
I mean, to be fair, I've got tons of like favorite stories in the sense that, you know, like End of Time, you know, the Journey's End, like of it, Doomsday, like it, so many of them are what I would consider to be my favorite episodes. But Fires of Pompeii is such an amazing episode, just that stands just so well by itself. It's more than just one episode because we get so much of like Donna and the Doctor and everyone. But I think when we look at like Donna specifically, we really get to know more of her character. She really changes the Doctor in that episode, like to let's just save one person. Also, I think Peter Capaldi's great in it. But That ending just has stuck with me as one of the best endings of a Doctor Who episode ever. But just that it's such a strong episode from like just start to finish. In set in such a special place as well. Like it's such an important part of history. Just for those reasons, it's just such a really strong, amazing, fun and intense episode.
Like I agree with every single thing you say, but for me, I can't answer why the Fires of Pompeii is not one of my favorite episodes. Like, it's not even my top 10, but I agree with everything you're saying. Like, the ending of, you know, creating this myth of the Doctor as a household god, just that thing, it opens so many things about, you know, the mythos of the Doctor, like why everyone knows the Doctor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I can't give you a good explanation why it's not even on my top 10. But I agree with everything you said.
There's a lot of episodes to choose from when it comes to this, and I really had to spend a long time thinking about it, and that's just the one because the other one, the one on the crystal planet when they're all on the train, I think that's a really creepy episode. The silence in the library, there's so many to choose from.
So many.
But just that one, I always come back to that one as that is the one that I would watch over and over and over again. Also Partners in Crime, but that one. That one.
I kind of want to sit down and watch The Fires of Pompeii again, just because...
With us?
With you guys, because I just realized how good of an episode it is. But I can't give you why it's not on my top 10.
Yeah.
I do have a strong memory of one line that Donna actually says during that episode, and it's like, you fought him off with a bloody water pistol. Love you. Like,
I bloody loved it. Yeah.
It's such an iconic Donna thing to say, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
But, like, when it comes to The Fires of Pompeii, like, I just realized that I can probably talk forever about this episode as well. What do you guys feel about the choice, you know, the doctor makes in the quote-unquote volcano, and the ramifications of what he does? Do you know what I'm talking about? Spoilers for everyone who hasn't seen the episode, by the way.
You mean where he becomes part of history?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, again, I think that's one of why it's just such a powerful episode. Like choosing, it's effectively him choosing Gallifrey again, but on a smaller scale. It's how he thought he ended the Time War, isn't it? It's he pressed the button, killed everyone in order to save more people. But yeah, so I mean, it was that choice. It was that choice again.
Yeah, and I think it's a very important thing. If you look at Donna during that scene specifically, gonna say great acting in that scene, but you know, this hopelessness that I either save the planet or I save the people, and you can see on Donna's face like, oh shit, this is what the doctor does daily.
Yeah. And she was willing to like sacrifice herself too.
Yeah,
she was like, I'm gonna do this if you won't, you
know? yeah
and that plays so well with, you know, the Donna that grows during that episode, that she feels like she doesn't matter, like she's just one person that travels with the doctor. Like, I think it's in, is it in Journey's End or is it the episode before where, you know, the doctor can go into Donna's mind because Donna gets into the doctor's mind, and he says like, oh, you really believe that you're nothing special.
I think that is Journey's End.
Yeah, I think it's Journey's End. It's one of those two episodes.
It's when the doctor grows another doctor.
Yeah. You just pop another one. No, it's like you can see that already in The Fires of Pompeii, you see that Donna feels like I am just one person, I'm nothing special. If I can make the sacrifice for the better of humankind, I will make it. And
yeah,
it's like, god damn it, this is a really good episode. This is a great start to the podcast.
I have changed your mind.
No, it's still not top 10 for me, though.
That's fine.
I have a really specific list of top 10 episodes I always watch. If I'm having a down day and I need to watch Doctor Who, these are the 10 episodes I will watch. Speaking of, though, Shell, we already know what's your favorite episode because everyone who's listening to the podcast knows what your favorite episode is. But please tell us, what's your favorite episode and why?
Gosh, it's like I just spoiled it for myself. Yeah, so my favorite episode is Blink. Blink-182. I'm just kidding.
Wait, don't sing it. We can get copyright strike.
Blink is my favorite episode. It also features a companion. We have probably have not said her name. Martha.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, even though I was like, Martha was kind of like hit and miss sometimes for me, I liked her in this episode. This was also one of those episodes where the doctor, the 10th doctor, he wasn't in it for very much anyway, because he was like, what, like stuck in time, like in the past or something?
Yeah.
So, which I thought that was kind of an interesting take on it. Because, you know, the doctor's, you know, usually like up front and center, you know, and everyone else is just kind of like secondary. And this one, he was a secondary character.
Did you call him secondary, though?
Well, I mean, like, because he wasn't the main character in that episode.
I think he was a bit of a secondary character. I think Sally Sparrow was the main character in the episode, and the doctor took a very secondary role in it.
Yeah, because he wasn't able to intervene directly. He had to use Sally to get his point across.
Yeah, like, sort of like the Absorbaloff.
For me, like, he's not secondary. He's thirdly, like, because you have Sally Sparrow, who's obviously the main character, and then you have the guy who I never remember the name of. That's the secondary character for me.
Oh, well, I was just thinking, like, main characters and secondary.
Yeah.
Okay, you're thinking. Continue, Shell.
But yeah, it's just like, I just thought it was kind of a cool, like, way how they were, like, explaining, like, what is it? Like, the storytelling technique. And it was eerie, you know? It was really creepy. But okay, so my selling point when I'm telling people about this, and this is like the episode I tell people, you have to watch this episode, and then if you're not into Doctor Who after this, well then we can't be friends anymore. this is where I cut people off in my life, right? So how I sell it is, I'm like, all right, so imagine you find yourself stuck in 1969 without the TARDIS, and you become involved in a mysterious plot involving time travel, quantum physics, and terrifying stone angel statues that move. Only when no one's looking at them, though. And it introduced the iconic villains known as the Weeping Angels.
Yeah.
Which became one of the most popular and feared creatures in the Hooniverse. And the angels were quantum locked, which meant like they can only move when no one's looking at them. So it makes for a really cool screensaver on your computer. But anyway, this is kind of like how I sell it to people. And people are like, oh yeah, that sounds kind of cool actually. Like, is it like a horror? It's kind of like a horror-y episode because it's really dark. You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my favorite episode. I could talk forever about that, but I won't for time constraints.
Nah, I mean, was it also the first episode written by Moffat as well?
That's a great question, actually.
It might have been because it was written by him who later became the showrunner.
Yeah.
So maybe? We will have to dive into this.
I'm actually checking it right now.
Because it was amazing just kind of creating this. Because it was also like a brand new original monster. Obviously, we'd never seen the Weeping yet. And suddenly, like, in one episode, these statues become completely iconic. Like, statues, it's just like, I mean, it'd be the equivalent of having the carpet as the monster,
right?
But they just became, Yeah, but they just became so like interesting straight away and scary. Really properly scary.
Yeah, yeah, especially if you're not like really like expecting it, or like maybe it's your first time watching it, and it is a good like jump scare.
Yeah.
Too. like that dude who's like watching the monitor and he's like, "Oh shit."
I didn't like it because then the next time we see the Weeping Angels, it's the crash of the Byzantium. And then there's that, they're supposed to move really quick, right? And there's that scene with Amy when she's blind. And the Weeping Angels suddenly start slowly turning towards her.
Because it's making sure she can't see
But like really kind of slow, like they're supposed to be really, really quick. And all of a sudden they're like moving slower than we move. So I don't know, that took away the mystery of it a little bit, but.
That's a weak Weeping Angel as well. So like,
well, it was a whole bunch of them. It wasn't just one. There was like all.
Oh yeah, okay. Now I know. Now I remember what scene.
Yeah.
speaking about the Moffat though, the Moffat's first episode was actually The Empty Child. Are you my mummy?
Oh. That was actually good.
I just watched that episode recently.
Yeah. That's also like that's a great two-parter, but we'll come back to that. So Blink.
I wish they'd had Sully Sparrow come back as a companion.
Oh, I liked her. What was her actress name? Carrie Mulligan.
She's
great. Need her cameo again, please.
And she's always said that she would want to return, but. They've never invited her back.
Showrunners, if you're listening, this is your opportunity. Bring back Sally Sparrow.
Bring her back now.
That would be such a cool callback with the new Doctor as well. If we got like you know, one-time companions, like what's his name in Satellite 5 episode?
Oh, Adam.
Yeah. Like
Adam.
Give Adam his redemption. Give him his redemption.
He had his redemption.
He was a poopy.
No, he didn't have his redemption because the last thing we see of Adam is his mother saying, "Time just go like this," and snaps her fingers, and his brain's open.
No, like, in the comics, he captures all of the doctors and all of the companions, and then saves them.
That's crazy.
Disregarding the comics, give Adam a redemption on TV, please. Back to Blink.
Adam can heckin' get out of here after that. Blink. It's you know, it's a fresh perspective in the Hooniverse, and I think it was kind of cool because it enabled and demonstrated experimental storytelling techniques too.
Yeah.
If you want to get technical theater words or something. Sure, anyway.
I'm going to let you do a solo episode for our Patreon where you do your dissertation of Blink.
I'll just read it straight from the paper. So
yes.
It's not super boring.
No, but Blink for me, it's number 5 on my list of best episodes ever.
High five. And
yeah, so can I still be your friend?
I guess. I mean, you saw the episode, you liked it, so you're my friend.
Oh, I love it.
We can say friends.
I only love it on number 5, but
yeah, that's okay. It doesn't have to be your favorite, you just have to watch it.
We can watch that again. Like, we have so many episodes we need to watch together, guys.
All of them.
Yeah,
we're going to start with The Girl in the Fireplace, though.
I love that episode, too.
Yeah, such a good episode.
Why does the series have... Okay, we're still on Blink, though. We'll stay on Blink. One of the things I love with Blink is also how it sets up, you know, living with the Doctor. And the Doctor is not in the episode for that much, but he is in the 1 year later scene. You know, when Sally gives him the script and stuff like that. And the doctor goes like, look, sorry, I got a bit of a, I can't remember, like, I got a bit of a complex life, I think he says. Things don't always happen in order.
Yeah.
It's confusing. And you're sitting there as the viewer and be like, that actually makes sense because he's a time traveler.
Yeah.
And I think this is the first time we ever see, you know, the doctor and the things around the doctor not happening in order. Then, of course, we have River Song. We're going to probably speak about her in a later episode, where she also, like, she never meets the doctor in the right order. But just the thing that, oh, it gets a bit complex because things are not happening in order. I don't know if I know you or not, but you might know me. And it's just a throwaway line. Like, it's over in, like, 5 seconds.
That's been played upon more after that as well, because then we have that whole season where we saw the Doctor die in the first episode.
And then yeah.
Spoiler, by the way.
Season with the, and I'm not going to say which one, but then we have a whole season with the younger Doctor.
Yeah. And it's like, it starts as a throwaway line, but then we get to explore it even more. And I just love it. And then how he ends the episode. Listen, got a dash, things happening. Well, 4 or 5 things. Well, 4 things in the lizard. Like, it's such a David Tennant, Doctor Who moment. It's such a funny line to say. And you go like, but I want to see those 4 things in the lizard. Like, what's the lizard? And the question is the lizard Madame Vestra?
Probably not.
It could be, though.
The lizard was about to give birth.
Well, who says that Silurians can't replicate? Okay, no. Now we're going too deep.
But that was also that thing as well, because I think it was Stephen Moffat that said, because originally he wasn't sure if David Tennant was going to leave after the end of time. They weren't 100% sure if he was going to leave. Or if he was going to do a series 5. So I think the his actual plan for this, I don't know if you guys have read this or not, but his actual plan was it would start with the 11th hour, except it would be called something else or whatever. It would be David Tennant's Doctor that lands instead of the 11th Doctor, and he meets Amy, the 10th Doctor. He's like all bruised and bleeding and everything. And he has like some food with Amy. And then goes away, and then like then it cuts to like 30 years, 20 years later, however long it was, and then we see the 10th Doctor again, but he has no memory of meeting Amy, and he was saying that was his plan for that one. That's where he got the idea to do it later on, was that the 10th Doctor that we saw at the beginning of the series was going to be the 10th Doctor about to regenerate into the 11th Doctor. And we would have gone the whole series with this younger Doctor building up to this moment at the end where he then goes, he's dying, he's about to regenerate, and goes back and has food with younger Amy.
Ooh.
But then, obviously, then David Tennant announced he was leaving, and he just mixed it up and just had the 11th Doctor land there all after regenerating.
Yeah, but then we got, like, you know, the opposite of that, where Amy has grown up with the Doctor. Okay, now we're in a totally different episode for everyone listening, but we're talking about the 11th hour now, but you have Amy, a companion that's grown up with the Doctor, but the Doctor has not grown up with Amy.
Yeah.
So they kind of switch it around. Like, I would have loved that concept if David Tennant stayed on as the Doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also think that the 11th hour is a good episode, because it also shows, you know, the Doctor has this big impact on young Amy, and then he disappears. He said 5 minutes, but...
Yeah.
Amy grows up with the Doctor, and she knows the Doctor. Because you see it with in the Let's Kill Hitler episode as well, that Amy has been talking about the Doctor
forever. Yeah.
But the Doctor has, like... He doesn't know Amy like Amy knows the Doctor. Like, it's such a good switch around.
But then, Mike, what's your favorite episode? Oh,
that was a quick transition. I could have spoken about the 11th hour for another hour.
I know, but unless that is on your list.
My two episodes, and I need to say it's two, but it's one arc, is The Impossible Planet and the Satan's Pit.
Yeah.
And yeah, like that's the that's the reaction I get from most people when I say that, because they go like, yeah, they're good. They're good episodes. For me, they're absolutely fantastic. And I know it's a bit of a cheat to take two episodes and make them into one, but I will just count them as an arc.
It's not.
Well,
I mean, it is an arc, but like, I mean, it's not like, you know, cheating to say two episodes are one.
Some people think I'm cheating here, though.
I think two power episodes are fine.
I just go with the fact that in the story numbers, they are 174A and 174B. So I see, like, they are the same episode. But the reason why is, like, there are three things that makes it the best episodes for me. First of all, you have something that TARDIS can't translate. So you create something, you know, the text on the wall. Like, it's old, it's impossibly old, because the TARDIS can't translate it. It sets up, you know, this kind of suspense, like, why can't the TARDIS, like, we have been raised for like 50 years that the TARDIS can translate everything. Why can't it translate this? So you're starting building the suspense. And then I like episodes where, you know, you have the TARDIS, but the Doctor can't use the TARDIS. Because it's the same thing with the sonic screwdriver. Sometimes it's a plot convenience. It's like a Deus Ex Machina. I hope I said that right. But, like, it would have been so easy just hop back into the TARDIS and just leave. But they lose access to the TARDIS. So the Doctor is, quote-unquote, helpless. And that's the second thing. And the third thing, we actually got to meet the actual devil. Spoilers, by the way.
It was scary, yeah. It was a scary episode. Yeah.
Yeah, but it shows that, you know, I think, I can't remember the actual quote right now because my brain is just not having it, but he says something like, every religion has a concept of the devil, but maybe you're not the concept, maybe you are the one. So you have this doctor, like, we know in certain episodes and in certain seasons, like, the doctor has many names, there are many stories about the doctor, you know, he's a legend, he's a concept, he's an idea, he's a myth, but he's also the good guy. And then you have this concept of the devil. You have the good versus the bad. It's like a really, how should I say? It's like, you know, the old tale of good versus bad, but you have the good versus bad in one scene just facing each other. And then how everything ends, you know, the doctor is willing to sacrifice himself to fall into this black hole with the devil. He has to believe that Rose will save her, will save him. But he doesn't know, he just believe. And showing, like, the power, the belief system of the Doctor is so powerful that he saves the day by just believing in humanity, believing in his companions, believing his in, like, I can go on for hours about these two episodes. But these are the three main things that makes it so good. Like, you have this whole suspense building through, you get a reward in the end by meeting the actual beast in the pit, the devil, the concept of the Christian devil. You know, this big red guy with horns. And you have this standoff between the good and the bad. It's just, oh, I got chills just speaking about it. Then I'm going to say I don't like Toby in that episode, because I think he's a bit of a whiner. But
no one likes Toby.
Which one's Toby?
He's the one who gets possessed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he has a bit of a rough ending as well, doesn't he? Because he ends up dying.
Well, he's going into the black hole.
That's, you know, where Tobies belong.
Whoa.
I'm sorry if your name's Toby.
We love all listeners that give us...
Except
that,
Toby.
Yeah, no, if they're named Toby and gives us at least a 4-star rating on Spotify, we love you. No, but it's such a... For me, that's Doctor Who in a nutshell. You have, like, you know, some. It starts with something suspenseful. You get a good payout out of it. You get the good side of the Doctor, but you also get, you know, the darker thing of David Tennant. Because he has such a wide range of how he can play the Doctor. And then... You get another reward in later episodes, you know, in Human Nature and Family of Blood, where the Scarecrow guy says, like, oh, this Doctor who's fought gods and demons. That's a reference back to this one. Like, it's such a iconic moment. Like, the Doctor met the devil. And he faced the devil, and he beat the devil.
Yeah.
And that can also be said about, like, it could be a reference to the toy maker as well, the old toy maker. But it's still, you know, it builds this whole mythos about the Doctor, who he actually is. He can fight gods and demons and still go out victorious.
It was actually a really, really good episode. And then I don't know if you've seen the comic, The Beast is Back in Town. It was published
he's
a little
back
bit.
Town.
He comes back. He survives the black hole. Comes back, and he speaks English now. And he possesses Martha Jones, and calls the Doctor back, and wants to travel with the Doctor in the TARDIS, and then they have a battle with Cybermen or something. It's been a while since I've read it, but I remember something like that.
I need to look this up. I haven't read this comic. I'm gonna be honest here. I need to read it.
I think eventually the Doctor, like, banishes him to the time vortex. And that's the last... And then that's the last time we see him.
So the Beast could come back.
I mean, yeah, but I don't think that comic is considered canon. I think it because the Beast isn't very scary in it. He's like, I'm English now, so it kind of takes away the scariness from him and turns him more into the what's it? I've forgotten the name of the flat lady.
Oh, Cassandra.
Cassandra, yeah, he becomes more like Cassandra more than anyone else.
But to be fair, the term "I am British now" is scary for some people, because British people are quite scary, actually.
Are they?
Yeah.
Absolutely terrifying.
People who can survive on only tea. That's scary.
Oh.
That episode also brought in the spacesuit for the first time, which has been used by every Doctor ever since.
Yeah, like, it's a spacesuit that we see in, for instance, Waters of Mars, which is also a really good episode when it comes to suspense. But you see Capaldi in it, you see Whittaker in it. I don't know if we see Matt Smith in that spacesuit.
Yeah, we do. The ghost episode. He walks out onto the sun. Or, like, he walks out onto the Earth years into the future. And with Clara.
All right, yeah. Like, I can go on forever about these two episodes, but you see, like, this is why it's such a big episode for me, because it sets up so much things in the future as well. But when we talk about the Doctor, like, we should make an episode where, like, who is the Doctor for us? Like, everyone needs to write 4 things about the Doctor and what we see as the Doctor. But when we look at how people speak about the Doctor and the stories about the Doctor, this is one of the episodes, for me at least, where we get this kind of mythos, you know, the God Slayer or the Demon Slayer Doctor. And I can understand why in some languages Doctor is translated to Great Warrior. Because, like, who can fight the Satan himself and win if you're not a Great Warrior?
Yeah.
So it's like... Yeah, I don't know. It's just a great episode. For everyone who hasn't watched it yet, go and watch it. You can see it on BBC iPlayer.
We are not sponsored,
by the way. I just want you to know you can see it on BBC iPlayer.
So we've all got David Tennant episodes.
Yeah, but like my third one is actually a Matt Smith episode.
Yeah, but our top ones are all David Tennant.
Yeah, but I think we can agree that David Tennant was, you know, he brought back, you know, the thing to Doctor Who that was kind of lacking. Like, no shade on Christopher Eccleston. He did a great Doctor, but he didn't, you know, grow into the Doctor that we're talking about now. Like, David Tennant...
I think it's not just that, but I think it is also the writing. You know, we're the writing in the first season is obviously brilliant, but I think it was probably also very hard to write. I think when we get into series two, I think at that point the writing does become a lot stronger. The episodes become a lot... Probably also the series gets a bigger budget. The series becomes more creative. And I think it really kind of glows up a little bit. Which is why, you know, these episodes are just so well written. And like just look amazing. Even though I don't know how much of a budget Blink has. I mean, I guess they had to make a lot of statues, but yeah, I don't know.
No, I don't know either. It feels like the first season when Eccleston was the Doctor, they were just like, you know, trying the waters again, see how far can we get. But we have some really good episodes in the first season. But I feel also that David Tennant was, you know, I saw him in Casanova. And you see that David Tennant in Casanova and David Tennant in Doctor Who, it's the same flair, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, you're right when you say that we all chose David Tennant, but if we go to the other Doctors, who's your favorite episode? Like, Chell, your favorite episode with any of the other Doctors? You can choose whatever, but you're not allowed to choose David Tennant.
Oh, none. I'm just kidding.
Wow. I hate all of them.
Kidding, I just thought it would be funny to say that.
Shell is just slowly, you know, scribbling down Mrs. Shell Tennant.
Right. That's my whole, like, diary. no, I was checking out the BBC iPlayer and I was like, okay, maybe that's where I'll get some episodes. I can't view it in the U.S. So.
Oh, damn.
So, fun fact.
Where does the Americans watch Doctor Who, then?
On HBO Max. But
okay, not sponsored, Max, by the way, but...
My Max sub ran out, and so... Anyway.
we will have to hope people sub to Patreon so you can get HBO Max back. No, but Shell, a favorite episode that isn't a Tennant episode?
Shoot.
This is a really hard question.
It is a hard question for me. Hold on, I'm thinking.
While you think, maybe Callum has one.
Yes, Callum. Maybe you have one while I try to think of an episode name.
I really liked, and it can't be the 10th Doctor, you said, right?
Yeah, it can't be David Tennant.
It can't be David Tennant, or it can't be the
10th? It can't be the 14th either.
Okay. I was going to say the Wild Blue Yonder. Okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
To be honest, one episode, I know you don't like it as much. I really, just, that comes to my mind. I don't know if it's my favourite non-Tennant episode, but it's just the first one I can think of. I really like the Pandorica Opens.
Okay, yeah.
Just because it's just such a, like, a wild, really fun packed episode with, you know, you've got all the monsters, the Doctor's speech, Rory coming back, Amy remembering Rory. It's got River Song. It's just got everything. I think, I mean, this is a bit of a cheat. I think the 50th anniversary is also a really awesome episode.
Yeah, but that has David Tennant in it.
I know. and then I think also... A Good Man Goes to War, I think is the one that I'm going to go with. I think it has to be A Good Man Goes to War is one of my all-time favorite episodes because it's a roller coaster.
A Good Man Goes to War. Like, I live by one of the quotes in that episode.
Yeah.
A good man need no rules. This is not the time to find out why I have so many.
Yeah.
Like, that's such an iconic quote.
It is great when the Doctor has, like, a dark moment, isn't it? Where he kind of goes, like, he kind of slips into, like, you know... I mean, to be honest, like, if anyone was, like, if anyone had a reason to become a villain, the Doctor definitely has a reason.
Yeah, that's his villain moment.
He would be very much justified if he decided to go evil.
Yeah. I agree with that one. Good Man Goes to War is actually number 10 on my list, by the way. So
Time Lord Victorious.
Oh yeah.
What about you, Shell? Could you think of one?
Okay. So I had to look up the name of the episode and I was like, oh yeah, I remember that one, what it was called. And it was literally what I was thinking. But I didn't want to say it just in case I was wrong. So it's okay. Let's see if you guys can guess what it is. It's a fun episode. And there are dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs on spaceship.
I was like, that I think was probably like one of it was just like a fun episode where like you didn't really have to think too deep about it either. And it was kind of cool because, you know, Queen Nefertiti was in it, and it was just, and the John Riddell.
Yeah.
call back to our episodes about companions where we actually spoke about this, where you didn't know their names.
I had to like go back and look at the episode list because I was like, wait, is that dinosaurs on a spaceship? And so this episode is a little special to me because so when I cut to North Carolina, this was like the only episode I could get.
Oh,
damn.
So and it was I was in a really, really low place. So this episode really helped keep me like cheerful and, you know.
Because it's just so fun.
Because it was fun and
and
you know, not deep. Which is nice when you're in a dark place, you know?
Yeah, I guess. I just remember it because the robots are David Mitchell and Robert Webb.
The robot.
Yeah, which are, they're both famous British actors, like comedians. They did like Peep Show.
Peep Show.
They're the robots. So yeah, it's always when you see them on screen together, I just think, it's them. It's Mark and Jez.
I can only think of that they're playing fetch with the triceratops.
Triceratops.
With a golf ball.
Yeah. Like what else are you gonna play with? A squishy ball?
Goes on for ages. When he throws it and the triceratops chases it, that golf ball like really goes. It just doesn't. It just bounces forever.
Yeah, but it's a golf ball.
They don't bounce forever, though. They bounce like three times and then they roll.
No,
but that wasn't it. Though that like he they bounced it and like bounced off of like three walls and just kept going down the corridor, and the dinosaur chased it and the robots lost them.
Yeah, but the fact that they're playing fetch with the Triceratops, like, yeah, it's not an episode to analyze that deeply. But
no, it's not a deep episode. It's fun.
I do agree that it's a fun episode. I think we can start to see a pattern here, that there are some episodes where we could probably talk for hours and just deeply analyze.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, ooh. Vincent Van Gogh.
Yeah.
Oh, ooh. Yeah.
Oh, there were so many good episodes.
Sorry, I just had to throw that one out there because I love it.
Yeah, that's also not on my top 10. That's the thing.
Well, okay, Mike, what is your favorite non-tenon episode?
Like, my favorite Doctor is Peter Capaldi, but, like, my favorite non-tenon... Journey to the Center of the TARDIS.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good one.
Because we get to explore the TARDIS... We get to see some of the rooms that, you know, always have been mentioned, but no one has ever seen. The whole library scene is such a good thing. I think Clara is doing a really good job as a companion in that episode as well. But the reason why that episode is so important for me is the fact that this is where Clara finds out about herself.
Yeah.
Like, you have this thing that the Doctor is keeping from her, like, hitting the way that, oh, I have met you before. And this is where it kind of, you know, comes back to haunt the Doctor as well, that all of his secrets that he's keeping from his companions might be an issue. It's a trust issue. And it also creates, you know, this... kind of relationship between the Clara and the Doctor, where Clara is, do you even trust me as your companion? Because why wouldn't you tell me this?
Yeah.
Because, you know, Matt Smith goes like, oh, who are you really? Like, it shows that during this whole half season where they have been together, he never actually trusted Clara. Like, who are you? Are you a spy? What are you? And Clara is just standing there like, I don't know what you're talking about. So, for me, it creates so much tension between the Doctor and his companion, but and it grows on into the Capaldi era as well, where, you know, Clara is the one who knows the Doctor and needs to get the Doctor back to who he was. Like, that's why the Journey to the Center of the TARDIS is probably my most my favorite non-tenant episode. Sorry, got some words mixed up there. Like, here we were supposed to go into a section where we talk about our worst episodes, but I think we're going to save that one.
Yeah, I need to think about that one more, actually. The worst episode I'm going to have to think about.
Yeah, I think I need to do some research because I can't remember the name of it. I know it's one of the old ones, but... I think we're going to save that for episode 6, actually.
Episode 6.
Yeah, because episode 5 will be something that Shell has suggested as a recording topic.
Oh, what might that be?
and here, this is why it's such a good segue, because Callum has mentioned the comics quite a lot this episode, to be fair. We are going to talk about Doctor Who in the media, and we're just not going to talk about, you know, Doctor Who on TikTok and YouTube and stuff like that. We're going to talk about also the comics and the, what you call it, sound books.
How Doctor Who has influenced other shows and films also.
So it's going to be a pretty packed episode, actually. One thing we're going to talk about during that episode is Doctor Who with Star Trek. That's why I did Star Trek in the beginning as well.
What's your favorite Star Trek episode, Kel?
No, yeah, what's your favorite? No.
I've never seen one.
You could hear crickets now. If someone lives near Callum and has some Star Trek episodes, can you, or just...
Yeah, but can we talk about Doctor Who and Star Wars The Old Republic?
We can, because there is... No, okay. So there's going to be a lot of things. There's going to be a lot of things discussed about the media, like comics, the Big Fish productions. We're going to talk about other shows.
Big Finish.
Big Finish, sorry. Sorry, I just saw my Discord name in one of the Discords, and this list says Mike the Fish.
Mike the Fish!
No, that's also a callback to Jim the Fish, for those who know that. But this is what we're going to discuss Jim next week. Fish? Jim the Fish, come on.
No, that's the quote. Who's Jim the Fish?
No, but... next episode goes out next Sunday. We will talk about Doctor Who in the media. It will have a catchier name, though. Because we always have catchier names. Do we feel finished there, guys?
I feel fish there.
I feel fish, yeah.
Yeah, we're fish.
I'm never going to live this down now.
Real big fish.
So this is Regeneration Radio with Mike, Shell, and Callum saying goodbye and hopefully see you next week.
Bye, friends. Bye, folks. Hope you find your dad.
Croissant.